Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. Look to Christ. These words are the theme of Pope Benedict's pastoral visit to Austria this week, and in particular to the Marian Shrine of Maria Zell, which celebrates its 850th anniversary on September the 8th. It is no coincidence that the Holy Father's visit to Maria Zell also coincides with the feast of Our Lady's birthday. The very last words that we hear from Mary in the Gospels were spoken at the wedding feast of Cana, when she said to the attendants, "Do whatever he tells you," referring, of course, to her son, Jesus. Combine those words of our Blessed Mother with the theme of the Pope's visit to Austria, and we have the entire Gospel message in two sentences. Look to Christ. Do whatever he tells you. Neither Mary nor Pope Benedict could better express in human words the entirety of their own lives and mission, and that which ought to be the focus of our every moment on this earth. In today's programme, we will look ahead to the Pope's journey to Austria, which, although it has its formal moments, is also a pilgrimage of love. We will also reflect on the feast of Our Lady's birthday, which the Church celebrates on September the 8th. But first, we will hear of the Pope's message from today's general audience. Lydia O'Kane tells us more.
This was the Pope's final general audience before making his apostolic voyage this weekend to Austria on the occasion of the 850th anniversary of the Maria Zell Shrine. Speaking to the faithful in the Paul VI Audience Hall, the Holy Father continued his catechesis on the founding fathers of the early Church, again reflecting on one of the great Cappadocian fathers of the 4th century, St. Gregory of Nyssa.
Dear brothers and sisters, in our catechesis on the teachers of the early Church, we once again consider St. Gregory of Nyssa, one of the great Cappadocian fathers of the 4th century. At the heart of St. Gregory's teaching is the innate dignity of every man and woman, made in the image of God and called to grow more fully into his likeness.
Pope Benedict went on to say that this ascent to God calls for a process of purification, which, by his grace, perfects our human nature and produces fruits of justice, holiness, and goodness.
In all of this, Jesus Christ, the perfect image of the Father, is our model and teacher. Gregory insists on Christ's presence in the poor, who challenges us to acknowledge our own dependence on God and to imitate his mercy.
During his audience, the Holy Father, speaking in English, sent his best wishes to those who are participating in the Arctic Symposium taking place in Greenland. The gathering is being organised by the Athens-based Religion, Science and Environment Organisation. This year, the 7th symposium will focus attention on this country, one of the world's largest but least populated islands, and will look at how rapid environmental changes there, such as the melting of ice, are already affecting the rest of the planet.
I wish to greet all the participants, various religious leaders, scientists, journalists, and other interested parties, and to assure them of my support of their endeavors. Care of water resources and attention to climate change are matters of grave importance for the entire human family.
Before heading back to his summer residence in Castel Gandolfo in the Roman Hills, Pope Benedict imparted his apostolic blessing upon the crowd and thanked them for their warm response. I'm Lydia O'Kane.
The pastoral visit to Austria of a pope with a great love for the Mother of God coincides with both the 850th anniversary of its most important Marian shrine and the feast of Our Lady's birthday. In the space of one weekend, his busy schedule will include formal and informal occasions. And yet, for Pope Benedict, the journey to Austria is also a homecoming to a place that he dearly loves. We now hear more about the forthcoming trip that is also a pilgrimage. Austria's main Marian shrine at Mariazell celebrates its 850th anniversary this year on the feast of Our Lady's birthday on September the 8th. It is, therefore, entirely appropriate that the pastoral visit of a pope with such a great love for the Mother of God should be timed to coincide with both the 850th anniversary and the feast of Our Lady's birthday. As with his previous journeys to countries outside Italy, the Holy Father's visit to Austria is both formal and informal. He will move between Vienna and Mariazell during the 3 days of his stay in Austria. As always, the events of the Pope's packed schedule will be followed closely by Vatican Radio. The English programme's Veronica Scaresbrick will be in Austria with the Holy Father, and so, before she left Rome, we chatted together about the forthcoming journey. Veronica, you're going to Austria with the Pope, but this particular papal visit is very different from any others that he's made, isn't it?
Yes, it's an official visit. It's a pastoral pilgrimage to Austria, in particular to Mariazell, which is a Marian shrine high in the Styrian mountains, which is celebrating 8.5 centuries since it was first founded. But you're right, it is a particular trip because the Pope has great affinity with Austria. Let's not forget he was born only miles away from the border. And he even describes this childhood spent crossing that bridge over the Salzach River to Austria, which is very similar in terms of cultural and historical heritage to his native Bavaria. And, of course, Bavaria and Austria share a strong Catholic heritage, don't they? And he wrote this letter to the diocesan newspapers saying that he was happy to come back. It was a very touching letter. At any rate, this is also an official pilgrimage. It's his only European pilgrimage this year, and it's his 7th journey abroad. And the Austrians, I think, are really excited about him coming.
Because with him having such deep personal roots, it's really like a trip home, isn't it, in many ways?
Let's not forget that they speak the same language there, and we're expecting to hear him speak off the cuff a lot as well, which will make things difficult for me as a reporter there.
But I was struck when you spoke to Cardinal Schönborn, you asked him what it was that was being expected from the visit of the German Pope, and he changed it and said, no, he is the Pope. Because that in itself puts a special emphasis on his visit.
Well, we first expect not the German Pope, but the Pope. We expect the successor of Peter, and we expect from him what Jesus taught Peter to be his task. Conforta fratres tuos, encourage your brethren.
Cardinal Schönborn, as Archbishop of Vienna, of course, is the host, in a sense. I mean, obviously, the Pope is hosted by Austria at a more official level by the federal president, Heinz Fischer. But as Archbishop of Vienna and president of the Bishops' Conference, Cardinal Christoph Schönborn is a host. He's also a former student of the former Cardinal Ratzinger, which gives it an extra personal touch, too. Yes, he comes as Pope. There have been a lot of problems in the Catholic Church in Austria in the past years, some sad moments of turmoil. And so he comes to confirm the Austrians in their faith. Of course, secularization hasn't stopped at the gates of Catholic Austria. The theme is a special one, and it's not really surprising if you know Joseph Ratzinger before he became Pope and afterwards. He's just written a book on Jesus of Nazareth, and the theme is Look to Christ. It's a theme which represents the hallmark of Pope Benedict's pontificate, an invitation to all Christians to be as the Lord taught us, witnesses to Christ. And it's a challenge Pope Benedict deems especially necessary in Europe at this particular time in history when there is, he said in the book, global poisoning of the spiritual climate, which is kind of an interesting expression, isn't it? I think his message to look to Christ is for us to be witnesses, not be afraid to highlight the divine nature of Christ and his vision of love, which is important in our secular societies.
And it reminds me actually of a couple of years ago. So this is actually before his pontificate, when he was still cardinal. And it was when there was a youth gathering in Rome, and you had this amazing banner outside St. Peter's with, "We want to see Jesus." And that is very much, "We want to see Jesus." The attitude with which the Pope is facing this trip to Austria, because it will have its formal aspects, but it's very much a pilgrimage as well, isn't it?
Yes, the Marian theme is very strong. He begins as he arrives at the Mariensäule in Vienna. He did that in Bavaria, in Germany. Do you remember when he went to Munich, when he returned home, he started under a Marian sign. Then, of course, the great event is on Saturday at Maria Zell, where, by the way, it snowed, apparently.
Really? Already?
Yes, it remains to be seen whether the snow will melt.
Veronica continued, describing the Marian shrine so dearly loved by not only the people of Austria, but also of Hungary and of the Slavic peoples. Even the carved wooden statue of Mary highlights the theme of the Pope's pilgrimage, Look to Christ.
I think the theme that we've just been talking about, Look to Christ, is best symbolised perhaps in the depiction of Our Lady in the Marian shrine. Because there's this little carving of a Madonna, and she has the child Jesus in her lap, and she's pointing, indicating with a hand that's larger than the rest of the figure. It's out of proportion, and the index is even larger. And it's like she's saying, look to Christ, which is a nice image and symbolises the theme of this journey. Interestingly, Mariazell is 150 kilometres south of Vienna, and it's been a place of pilgrimage, of course, from all the surrounding areas. In fact, it's been known as the mother of Austrians, of Hungarians and of the Slav people. And the Rom and Sinti have been coming there for years to seek refuge and consolation. And I have to say that people kept coming even when there was an iron curtain in place in the neighbouring countries. So that's for as much as we can say for Maria Zell.
And it's also the feast of Our Lady's birthday when he's there.
Oh, that's interesting too.
But the brief stay in Austria has a busy timetable outside the shrine at Maria Zell.
In Vienna, there's going to be a big meeting in the cathedral, which is symbolic for Austrians, the Cathedral of St. Stephen, the Stephen's Dom, with the great Pumarin. If I'm pronouncing that wrong, I'll find out how to pronounce that. Bell, no? Famous bell. And he'll be saying Mass there on the Sunday. So Mariazell is kind of sandwiched in between the first day he arrives in Vienna, when he has the meeting in the square with the people, and he's going to visit the Holocaust Memorial. And in the afternoon, the official moment that you were talking about earlier, with the federal president of Austria, Heinz Fischer, in the great Hofburg complex, a legacy of Imperial Vienna at its best. Also there, he'd be meeting and speaking to civil authorities and diplomats, because there are representatives there to United Nations bodies, which is quite unusual. It's kind of like an international city. Ends on Sunday, starting by Pope Benedict's celebration of Mass. And of course, the visit ends in a concert house with volunteers, which is kind of fitting for Vienna, isn't it? It's the kind of place that famous composers wrote music on the back of menus, isn't it?
Yes, and there are going to be a couple of musical interludes in that meeting with the volunteer associations.
And another place he's going to before he meets with the volunteers before this last concert is Heiligenkreuz, which is a vibrant abbey, a Cistercian abbey in the Vienna woods. And it's located on the sacred way to Marietzell and run by Abbot Gregor Henkel Donnersmarck. For most people, this name will be famous because he has a famous nephew who won an award recently, an Oscar for his film Life with Others. And his nephew actually wrote the part of that film in the convent there. At any rate, it's a vibrant abbey for other reasons, because at a time when there are few vocations, there are a lot of vocations in this particular place. It was consecrated in 1133, just to tell you how old that is, which it actually marks over 8 centuries and a half, so that makes it older than Marietzell, the shrine at Marietzell. The Pope goes there because there's an ecclesiastical school of theology that's been set up. That's about it. So Marietzell sandwiched between 2 days in Vienna.
Yes, but you also are not going just on behalf of the English programme, because your work is going to be international in more ways than one, because you're also feeding reports for the South Asia programme and for English Africa.
Well, let's not forget this is an international radio station, isn't it? And we are taught to serve others, aren't we, as well?
Well, safe journey and safe return.
Thank you, Janet.
Why do we celebrate Mary's birthday? Dom Augustin Measures, an English Benedictine, tells us more. It is perfectly normal to want to celebrate a mother's birthday. That was why, when I was running the Catholic radio station in Lusaka, Zambia, we would make great efforts for the feast of Our Lady's birthday. Obviously, we couldn't send her a birthday card, but what we did instead was to create special programmes in her honour. Some of these were live phone-ins, in which people from across the diocese would talk about the important part Mary played in their lives. It was one way in which some of her children could wish their mother a happy birthday and say thank you to her for all that she had done for them. This year, Pope Benedict is doing just that when he travels to the Shrine of Our Lady in Marietzell in Austria to celebrate her feast, her birthday celebration that is also the 850th birthday of the shrine erected in her honour. Dom Augustin Measures, an English Benedictine, reflects on the importance of the Feast of Our Lady's Birthday. So important is this celebration of Mary's birth that even as he spoke, bells were ringing from the church outside in Bamber Bridge, Lancashire.
The Feast of Our Lady's Birthday is a very ancient one in the church, and that was the foundation, the reason why, when the dogma of the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, later was proclaimed as a dogma, had to be on December the 8th. The church is very mathematical about these things. It had to be exactly 9 months previous to September the 8th, you see. So that explains why the Immaculate Conception is on December the 8th, because the birthday of Our Blessed Lady was on September the 8th, and that had been there long before. And why did the church make such a fuss about Our Lady's birthday so early on, because it was very early on? Well, they seem to have venerated her First of all, you know, not so much as the Mother of God, but as the Mother of the Church. It's what they believed she was the Mother of God, but the thing that really attracted them, that because Jesus Christ was had become one of our, a brother to each of us, brothers to all of us, you see, all the members of his church come into his church by baptism, and we become brothers of Christ. Therefore, we were thereby made children of Mary, weren't we? And she has that motherly concern for us, just as she had for him. Now, this goes along with the scene, which you probably well remember, when some people came to pester our Lord and said, your mother and your brethren, your kinsfolk are outside, they want to have a word with you. And he looked round at the people that were sitting listening to him, and he said, who are my brother and sister and mother? The people who do the will of my Father in heaven. These are my brother and sister and mother. And he indicated the people round him, you see. So he makes us all his brothers and sisters, and therefore she has a motherly relationship to us. And that's what seemed to strike the church first and foremost.
Father Augustine links the celebration of Our Lady's birthday to that of her being presented in the temple.
There's a feast at the end of November, which is of great interest. It's the feast of the presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Now, you remember that our Lord was born on Christmas Day. He was circumcised on, well, New Year's Day, 1st of January. And therefore, his presentation in the temple was on February the 2nd. This is all in accordance with the rules laid down in the book of Leviticus, chapter 12. Now, that's the regulations for a boy child. For a girl child, the time between birth and the presentation in the temple is 33 days longer. So that's why that's an ancient feast too. The presentation of Our Blessed Lady in the temple is celebrated as a sort of completion of her birth and acceptance into the human race and society and so on.
Have you ever thought of Mary as a little three-year-old girl sitting on the altar steps and dancing with her feet? Yet this endearing image of the child who had become the Mother of God is very ancient and shows just how much she was already loved and venerated by the early church.
But the interesting thing about the presentation feast is we have very early evidence how much they venerated Our Blessed Lady. And that is found in a curious document called the Gospel of James. It's one of the what they call apocryphal gospels. It's certainly not the Word of God. And you can tell that yourself quite easily by reading it. There's nothing off-colour in it at all. But you certainly find at the beginning of it, I've read this sort of thing before. Yes, you have. You've read it in St. Luke. They're trying to construct a childhood, conception and childhood for his mother, as St. Luke gives us the story of conception and childhood for Jesus, you see, the Annunciation and all that. So they have to include somehow that presentation in the temple. And I'll just give you a little snippet out of that, which says something very dear. It's not doctrinal at all. And we know that the whole document of the Gospel of James is a sort of crib. He's pirating the Gospel of St. Luke, you know. But in this point, it says they brought the child to the temple and presented her. And they seem to have got it in their heads by then. She was 3 years old. The priest received the child. They presented the child in the temple to leave her there, you see, leave her with God, and kissed her and blessed her and said, the Lord hath magnified thy name among all generations. In thee in the latter days shall the Lord make manifest his redemption unto the children of Israel. And he made her to sit upon the third step of the altar.
Father Augustine continues, describing the way in which, from her earliest days, Mary was filled with grace.
Imagine a child sitting on the altar steps. And the Lord put grace upon her, and she danced with her feet, and all the house of Israel loved her. And that, I think, says it all. That affection for our Blessed Lady, as is an early document, there's no doubt about it, it's in the second century, not very long after St. John's Gospel, probably. It shows that they had, whatever the doctrine may be, the people of God had a great affection for her, and that this document, unlike so many documents of the ancient world, this survived, this one, along with the Gospels, of course, and many other actually apocryphal ones, which are rubbishy or heretical. But this one has this precious thing in it: she danced with her feet before the Lord, and all Israel loved her. So it says something very tender, doesn't it, about the early part of Our Lady's life, before we came to know her at the Annunciation, so to speak. And it explains something which hasn't ever been put into dogmatic terms of doctrine of any sort, but nevertheless, it's historically clear that for whatever reasons they had in their hearts, they chose to express their reasons, the people of those times, that they were very fond of her. And thank God for that. And they teach us a lesson.
And so, this week, as the Pope celebrates Mary's birthday at the Shrine of Mary at Celle, he's only doing exactly what the rest of the Church is doing across the world. He's saying, Happy birthday.
May we ever grow more and more fond of her, because she is the sure way of getting to her son. She will always take us to him and say, do whatever he tells you. So God bless us all.
And so we come to the end of our programme for today. You can hear it all again in whole or in its parts if you go to our website at www.vaticanradio.org/English. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. Until we meet again, may God bless you.
This is Vatican Radio, Laudato Jesus Christus.